football on off the ball.
We've always believed within this team, and look, we've learned the hard way sometimes. But look, we've got ourselves here, so we're focused on going out and, you know, making it a really competitive game, and hopefully we can come out on top.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.
Okay, it is Hurling Power Rankings Day. Will O'Callaghan, king of the Hurling Power Rankings, with me as always, Doyen of the Hurling Power Rankings. How are you doing?
King of the Power Rankings, I mean steward of the Power Rankings. Look, yeah, something like that. The person who is responsible, at least, when people complain and say, why is my team at third? Why is my team at the top? Why are you not putting my team at the top and putting the pressure on them? That is the pressure that falls back onto me, Michael.
And well, speaking of which, why is my team? No. We've only got really a couple of teams to talk about today. Two interesting, if not spectacular, provincial finals over the weekend. Before we get in, right, a lot of kind of criticism, I would say, probably of both games and of the championship in general this year. We were having a chat about this off air yesterday. I have to say the Munster final in particular, stop start and all as it was, probably not as smooth, weather kind of ruined, maybe refereeing ruined. There's definitely a lot of debate about that anyway. I just found it thrilling and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, talking about it, listening to things about it, reading about it since. There's something to be said for, no matter what kind of a game, if it's close, if there's 45,000 people packed in, absolutely rabid fever going on, and it matters to both teams who are incredibly close and have a great rivalry, a lot of the other stuff is kind of periphery, isn't it?
I agree. I mean, I think it was gripping and compelling right until the end of the game at Páirc Uí. It wasn't an instant classic like when the teams met at the Gaelic grounds last year and we had extra time and we had penalties after a thrilling game at the end of normal time last year as well. It wasn't that game, but it wasn't set up to be that type of game because of the day that it was at Páirc Uí as well, given the weather conditions, given, as you say, the stop-start nature of some of the officiating during the game, the fact that there were just so many frees during the match as well. But I would take that Munster final and the drama of what we saw on Sunday afternoon over what we saw on Saturday, which felt like far more of a mismatch in the game between Galway and Dublin. So for me, I would 100% take Sunday over that. I appreciate that people will say we probably haven't had too many classics because particularly a lot of the games in Munster Championship this year, Michael, just ended up being too one-sided. The margins ended up being too big compared to years gone by. But still, I get to this point where the six teams left in the Championship, particularly look at the potential semi-final pairings, and I wouldn't write this year off just yet, as some people are saying, oh, you know, football has been so much more compelling. Football has been really good, but why do we have to continually compare?
Well, you're the one who did it.
I know I did, but everyone else is doing it. Like, no, so many people have said, oh, whatever, at the weekend, just come by. You know, the football's been amazing. I can't wait for the football to come back next week. I've been enjoying the football as much as anyone else, but I think this is really weird where people pitch one against the other and decide that hurling now needs a massive amount of change because hurling's not been as exciting as football this year. We're facing into the business end of the championship now, and I still think that it's beautifully set up.
Did you fill out your survey?
I haven't yet. I'm going to do it this afternoon. I did share it in the Hurling Pod video and in the podcast this week, and I stuck it up on Twitter as well because I think a lot of people possibly missed it. Obviously, it went up last week. I had a quick look at the survey first, and I thought, I actually want to put a little bit of time into this, and I want to do it properly before I put it in. I didn't want to rush it through on Friday night, I think, when I looked at it first. So it's a very, very difficult thing to do, but I was incredibly aware, listening to Jim Gavin on the weekend, talking to John Duggan, that they took a lot of the feedback for the Football Review Committee from the initial survey. It certainly guided their initial conversations. So I would encourage everyone to be a bit like me, get it in before the deadline. And if you've been given out for ages, oh, hurling needs to change this, hurling should try this, structurally or rules or whatever should be changed, now is your opportunity to put it in. So yeah. I'm 100% going to have it in by tomorrow.
I did mine between the John McDonough final and the Leinster final on Saturday. And there was a lot of I found it very interesting. I found the questioning very interesting. Sometimes you are led to what they're trying to do by the questions they're asking. So it starts off by saying, do you find the disparity and the lack of spreading the game around the country an issue, or are you more into like the rules? It's like, okay, well, the spreading of the game is far more important. And then every question after that was about the rules and about how to change the game, which suggests to me they're trying to change the game. So I'd have a very, like, you know, like, don't pass the ball back to the goal. All these little tweaks that they feel are necessary. Whereas actually it's like, have we not just come through like an absolute golden age of hurling that maybe is tapering off for whatever reason, but like, give it some time. Football was in the doldrums for 15, 20 years before it needed these changes, and I think everybody agreed. The popularity of hurling at the moment, the fans that Cork are bringing to every game, obviously you had 45,000 at a Leinster final this week. Maybe that's an anomaly and there was a bit of belief in the Dubs or whatever, but it's still great to see. You have unbelievable Limerick support. You know, I think there's a hardcore support in the likes of Offaly and Clare, our counties, and so on. I don't feel like there's a massive cry out for a massively different game here. I think what we should be concentrating on is why is our game not being spread, or what's blocking that spread.
I'd agree. I think like that is looking at the bigger picture versus some of the minutiae that people get hung up on, because I've heard so many arguments about, and I do appreciate the idea, and Pat Ryan spoke about it brilliantly on the show a few weeks ago, about passing it back to the goalkeeper just discourages people pressing up. It discourages tackling, because what happens is you almost accept that the ball has gone back and you reset at that point and you're not going to have, you know, contested puck outs at that stage. I can appreciate the argument around it. Then you speak to some players and they say actually they much prefer that you can go back to the goalkeeper, because the reality is the ball ends up probably getting launched further than it would have if it was just a short stick pass and then played out from there.
There's arguments for and against it.
There's arguments against sidelines.
There was a lot of things that I put in that I was like number one of like 1 to 5 and how much you think they're a problem, and they weren't even things that I liked, but I just like, there's no need for this. Like, this isn't your silver bullet, and I hope that people who are kind of frustrated, you know, sometimes just watching matches and have the sort of, when you hit it in, to the fuck, elements to their fandom, don't just look at this in a kind of a short-sighted way and suddenly 80% of people want, you know, a certain thing that actually wouldn't really add to the game at all, because modern coaching is too good and it does not bring it back to what it was like in the 1970s.
A 2-point sideline cut is not going to grow the game outside of the traditional areas now. Someone on Twitter sent me, I think it was Joe Ryan who sent it to me just a couple of days ago, because we were having a discussion on the hurling pod about, you know, where sometimes there's opposition where it's a football dominant area and they're trying to grow hurling because, you know, they don't want to take away from the football and the way things are going within the club. I think based on, it was a 2024 demographic survey which showed the amount of clubs around the country, and I think only 3 or 4 counties have got more hurling clubs than football clubs. So maybe that just speaks to the job that Willie Maher has here. Yeah. Some are close enough in that I think Wexford, Offaly, it's almost 50-50. But I think Kilkenny, Tipperary, Limerick might have been the only counties, and maybe Galway just marginally, had more hurling clubs than football clubs. So growing clubs becomes the key issue, and possibly even amalgamating some of the competitions in areas where it's difficult for people to get matches against each other. I think that's a much bigger issue than whether someone gets 2 points for a non-contested sideline cut. So bigger issue is much bigger, but I'd agree with you. It seems a lot of that is very keenly based upon here are some tweaks that we could try out in the league next year.
Yeah, do fill it out though. You can get it. Will shared it on Hurling Pods. It's on GA.ie. Just type in GA survey into Google. You'll find it very easily as well. So I think it's worth doing. I think everybody who cares about the game, and I think if you're watching Hurling Power Rankings on a Wednesday afternoon, you probably care about the game. I'd say go and fill it out and have your say, because it is kind of cool that they will listen to all of the stakeholders, players, coaches, media, and fans, of course, most importantly as well, I think. So very good. Anyway, just to remind you that we'll actually talk about Power Rankings on the show at some point. The Power Rankings on Off the Ball are with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GEA, and with thanks to Harvey Norman, you could be in with a chance to win a TCL 75-inch 4K UHD smart TV. Just check out Off the Ball socials, social channels, for details on how to win that. Well, we'll start with page 2, which there isn't much to talk about on, I suppose. No changes there. None of the teams were playing. Kildare out, Wexford out, Kilkenny out in 9th place and stuck there for the rest of the year. Waterford out, Tipperary out. Offaly still alive and the last places of your top 6, but still there. A team that's not on that side of the power rankings but will be next year is Laois. County story of the week this week, Will. Laois, their third John McDonagh Cup final in a row. Think it's pretty hard to come back from losing 3 finals in a row. It wasn't the classic by any means. You were talking Off the Ball last night. I think you called it pretty SH1T. But, you know, Carlo had 22 wides. It wasn't the greatest game in the world. I did think, though, that Laois showed me enough that I think that they could probably step it up. And there is the other thing with Leash is they'll always find about like five or six lads on the club scene that just couldn't have been bothered, you know, or fighting with the managers, or, you know, there's always more hurlers in Leash than you see on the county team. So maybe they have a bigger opportunity than most to kind of get a team together, I suppose, for next year.
Yeah, and look, with the age profile of some of those players, maybe they step away now at this stage. We heard from Owen Riley at the weekend when he spoke to Stephen Gleeson. He's been in the Middle East for quite a while. I remember bumping into him on a flight when he was going back to play for Abbey Leaks. They've won three McDonagh Cups now with different goalkeepers, which is kind of unusual in and of itself in the reasonable short period of the history of this competition. But Owen would have been the goalkeeper, you know, pretty much a decade ago. Then Enda Rowland became the goalkeeper, and Cathal Dunn had been the keeper in recent seasons. And then Owen Riley got back in, got a call when he'd returned to Ireland from Tommy Fitzgerald, the manager, to come in and play. So I'm not sure if 35, if he gives it another year next year. Stephen Pickey-Mara became the top scorer in Leash hurling history this season. Again, given his injuries over the last couple of years, I wonder will he stay for another year. But they're an incredibly tight bunch as well. This is kind of the nature of the way the club scene is in Leash. And I was kind of surprised when I found out afterwards that I was talking online about, I don't know if anyone saw this, the Leash supporter who was given a socks 36 seconds into the game in the middle of a whole load of Carlow supporters who got picked up on the TV coverage. He ended up on the big screen as well. Turns out it's Podge Lawler, former Leash hurler, who was out on the beer with the Leash hurlers the next day. So his notoriety that he picked up on the big screen, where people having a good laugh on Saturday afternoon, because it happened so early in the game and just before a Carlow goal. Well, he went and enjoyed himself for the rest of the weekend as well. Oh, look, they've had some breakthrough players this year. Killian Dunn, who got player of the match in the final, got 1-6 in his debut season, which is very, very good indeed. And like, Tommy Fitzgerald took over this team in very difficult circumstances, you know, after unfortunately Darren had to step away after he'd taken the job due to his own health concerns. And Tommy was kind of just trying to keep things going last season. They suffered a relegation, they had to rebuild within the league. But when I said at the weekend I think that Leash could give Wexford and Offaly problems in the Leinster Championship next year, I was not basing that on the Joe McDonagh Cup final, which was a very, very poor game. Finals are there for winning, but Leash this year in some of their games, particularly I think of the two Kerry games in the league, basically storming to the Division 2 title, getting themselves into 1B next year. There's a lot for Leash to actually build on when they get back into the second flight, because they'll be playing against Wexford and Offaly, who are the two teams that they'll be targeting results against in the Leinster Championship next season. So definitely on the upward, and I did consider putting them just ahead of Kildare, but I still think if Kildare and Leash met tomorrow, I would fancy Kildare to beat Leash, and therefore Kildare stay in the power rankings.
Yeah, we've got you mentioned a few of those players that might, like, you know, be thinking about their future, but Aaron Dunphy, Pickey-Mara, both very good, I would have said at the weekend, and players that you would like to kind of see stay on and have maybe have their twilight in the Liam McCarthy rather than the Joe McDonagh. Just a word, another thing on the Joe McDonagh Cup, actually briefly, is we have next year we're looking at three of the six teams being from Ulster, which is, I think, a pretty good development. Obviously, Antrim have slipped back somewhat, but weren't too far off. They only lost out on head-to-head, I think, from the Joe Mac final in the end, despite a terrible start to the season. But you've Down, who were really impressive this year, probably their best year in a long, long time. And then Derry obviously beat Kerry in the Christy Ring final. And maybe there is some hope to that, because I think Derry and Down had fallen off so badly over the kind of years in the early 2000s versus where they were. So that's something to look out for next year. That's the end of that grade of the lower grades. We've six teams left in the All-Ireland Championship. Five of them are in the first page of the rankings. I'm delighted to say that better late than never, Rachel Sheehan joins us now as well. We thought you were doing a runner this week, Rachel, because, you know, what happened down in Cork on Sunday, but...
I'd always show up no matter what happened after the weekend. I'm actually over in Blarney GA here at the launch of the Hurling Championships, so I can promise I'm doing my job. There's a Go Games going on in front of us here now, so I think everyone's eyes are on trying to spot the next Mark Coleman or Shane Barrett from the Blarney Heads going on. So a lot of chat going on here. I can even hear outside the window the whole match is being dissected still from start to finish. So post-mortem's going on galore.
Any sign of Katie Taylor running through the middle of that match or anything like that? No, is that...
I was hoping so. She was down in Cork yesterday though, so we just might have missed her.
Pity. Okay, well, we're going to get to page one. All you've missed is Joe McDonagh talk and hurling survey talk. So we'll get into the actual hurling now, because you have two matches to really dig into. We're going to have a quick look at the Will's top five and see, has there been any changes? And there has. because Dublin have stayed in fifth place despite their loss to Galway. Clare have dropped down one because of Galway's impressive Leinster final performance. Leinster there up to third place, and Cork slip to second. Will, I thought Cork were fairly entrenched at the top. A 1 point win was enough to dethrone.
Yeah, of course it was. I mean, this is Limerick now winning two significant games against Cork this year. I think Cork went top of the power ranking. Some of them no doubt will remind me in the comments which week it was that we decided to put them top. I think we leapfrogged Cork above Limerick after the game that took place in the round robin series in Munster. So that's how close we felt the two teams were at the time, that really one result between them was enough to determine who was going to be at the very top. But you cannot take away from the fact now that Limerick have won the league final against Cork. They have won the Munster final against Cork. No team has ever won all three in 1 year, provincial final, the league final and the All-Ireland final. I think there's a very strong chance these two teams meet again in the All-Ireland final, despite the fact that some Cork supporters seem a little bit concerned about the performance at the weekend and are maybe worried actually that, you know, second half drop-off is now becoming a bit more of a trend than just being the All-Ireland final and being a complete and utter anomaly last season. And I think we'll get into that now in a second, the lack of scores and play that happened within that game. But I think you have to respect what Limerick have done. They've gone and won a Munster final at Páirc Uí Chaoimh for the first time in their history. They've won the league. They appear to have got to a point where pretty much everyone is fit and firing, with the exception of Aaron Gillan, who maybe hasn't quite come back to full sharpness, I think, after his injury, and it was unusual to see him get the hook at the weekend. But aside from that, I think you have to respect what Limerick have done, and as a result, that's enough to put Limerick at the top. And you have already explained exactly why Galway have gone ahead of Clare. That was Galway's best performance of the year. They've won a provincial title. Let's put them up to third.
Yeah, Clare were hanging on to third, I think, by default, really. So it just needed any kind of performance from Galway, who were good. We'll get into that in a minute. I think we'll go to the Saturday week. Before that, though, what do you mean nobody's ever won a league, provincial and All-Ireland the same year? That's 100%
against the same,
true.
Against the same opposition. Beat them in all times. That's what I meant. No,
it's like
no, I
meant it, that 40 times.
Sorry, I meant it about the saga as opposed to... This is a bit like one of the crappy quiz questions last week where they were really complicating it. I was listening to the podcast going, it's so clearly it's the beaten managers in the finals. Come on. And then I think one of the answers was it a manager who lost the first game on a Friday, was the way it was being explained. No, no team has beaten another opposition three times in those finals. Two national finals of principle.
We'll do that as the Harvey Norman side of the week after the All-Ireland final if Limerick win it. Yeah. But for now, I think I have something that's in a similar vein, and I think these are probably well-worn stats, but at the same time, they are the stats of the week, and you want to talk about Cork's lack of scoring.
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll bring Rachel in the moment. This is almost like going to be a therapy session, I think, at this stage, is what happened in the second half. But after Brian Hayes manoeuvred himself and somehow managed to, tennis-style, put the ball in the net from his backside, that was the last time that Cork scored from play within the game, which was in the 38th minute. And if you look at the lack of shots that they had, 13 from play throughout the game as well, that is incredibly shot-shy for a team who generally get into a flow state and create an amazing amount of chances. I think they'd put up at one stage on the RTE coverage out of 50 minutes gone, it was 19 shots overall for Cork and 29 shots for Limerick. And I appreciate that Limerick definitely controlled the possession of the ball an awful lot better, but that kind of brought home to me that when the game was going into the melting pot, Limerick had already had 10 more shots than Cork at that stage of the game, and they pressed on far more in the last kind of few minutes of the match as well in terms of shots that were taken.
It ended up as 42-23.
Yeah, which is that's a remarkable difference in a game that was reasonably nip and tuck in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, 42-23 in terms of shots. Now, Limerick's own fault that they weren't necessarily all that efficient or anything like it, really, and that's probably a worry on their side. But Rachel, it was also then, you said 13 there, Will. I had 26-10 from play, which that's 10 shots from play from Cork. Maybe it includes goal chances as opposed to points. I don't know exactly, but that's why that's not the Harvey Norman stat of the week. But either way, Rachel, it is a massive disparity for a game that came down to a point and that Cork led the whole way. And it is something that I think they'll be looking at this thinking, you know, we can complain about the referee all we like, but did Limerick kind of throw away a chance to kind of give Cork a bit of a hiding on Sunday?
That's what it felt like more to me. And the echoes of the All-Ireland final last year were worrying when you're sitting in the second half thinking it wasn't as obvious. I think because the free count was so high and the whistle was being blown so often, I didn't actually notice being at the game at the moment that we hadn't scored from play since Brian Hayes' goal, because the freeze
either.
Just almost felt like a given at one stage. But Limerick were so wasteful with some of those goal chances, and credit to Collins as well, he made some spectacular saves, but they shot some like such uncharacteristic ways that any other day are going over. So it only was a 1-point game, but at times it felt like we're leading by two, but we're also just hanging on by the skin of our teeth. Yeah. You know, it was unusual even at one stage. Alan Connolly, we're still 2 points up, he's running with the ball. Any other day he pops that over, but he hand passes the ball to Duds Healy, who was spectacular in fairness, and he gets hooked, and it's just, that's not what we've expected from this Cork team. Mm. Dara Fitz is really missed there as well for his shooting. You know, he can take them from downtown. Definitely. And he is really accurate with them, but it is a real worry. And I know with the conditions that you needed to somehow quell those scoring, because we'd be given out if it came on and saying Cork had 30 wides and they were really wasteful, but there is a happy medium somewhere. And to be fair, just credit to Limerick's defence as well, like you can't put that all on the Cork offence. Mm. They had them under serious pressure.
Yeah, I thought tactically, I wonder would Cork have been better served by Limerick catching them a little bit earlier. They were kind of hanging on to a lead for most of the second half, and I don't know, when you had the wind or when you were against the wind and you were kind of trying to create something, if you know, that ability to kind of just like let Limerick dominate in the backs and kind of go, because they were still chasing it. I think Cork might have tried something new if they'd fallen behind a little bit earlier. But I did
And
think,
even make a yeah. substitution a little bit earlier. I thought yeah. Seamus Hannity didn't come in until very late, when you're not getting any scores or shots off from playing your forward line. I think you have to make one or two changes. Like we saw, Kylie didn't hesitate to take Alan off, even though I think he was hard enough done by. Like he did well. Obviously shot selection was poor, but he set up a goal chance that was really well saved by Collins, and he was really hard done by at one stage by the ref, in fairness. I haven't seen this brought up anywhere, but Gillan has the ball and it's called for advantage, and I think he knows he has the advantage, so he takes the ball into contact with about four Cork players surrounding him, which he never would have done. You know, he would have recycled it, and then he gets blown up and the free goes Cork's way. So I probably looked harsh on him there as well. Whereas in any other circumstance, he gets the free and slots it over. Mm. But the fact that he substituted, and he was one of the forwards that I would have been most fearful of from a Cork point of view, I think that's one thing that maybe we could have looked to have made a change a little bit earlier on in the forwards.
That's a good point, actually, because you have someone like Barry Walsh, who's been great and will be great, but at this age, it's not going to happen every game. And it wasn't his game. You're going up against Hayes and Burns, you know, depending on what wing he popped up on. And it's like, grand, it's not your game. Let's bring on Seamus Harndy and make a bit of a dog out of it. Like, and that's the type of match it was, and so on. So, yeah. Another thing I would have a question of, Will, on the line, not necessarily against Cork, but in credit to Kinnerk and Kylie, was that I thought that second half was played very cleverly by Limerick, in that, like, it flooded the Cork forward line. So everybody was there, but Limerick trusted themselves to be so dominant there that it's not like hitting it up to two forwards in a kind of a blind way that Cork would clean up. They were so dominant, they had the time. And in that last 10 minutes where basically Hegarty and Casey won the game, they did it because Dermot Burns was winning ball, had loads of options, loads of time to pick out a man and not just lump it up the field. And I thought that kind of positioning of the Limerick team, where they basically played 13-2, was really, really smart. And I think Cork really didn't have any answers for it, because then they just, like, there was no space to hit the ball into. There was nowhere that you could avoid Kyle Hayes and Dermot Burns. You know what I mean? 100%. There just wasn't space for it.
And they, like, when Cork had beaten Limerick before, I think back at the semi-final a couple of years ago when they beat them, they became really good at avoiding the green wall, and that was one of the reasons that it worked. And then at the weekend, the amount of times that they poked ball in, where, as you say, either Dermot Burns, Kyle Hayes, or Will O'Donoghue, who was there as the spoiler if it went down through the middle, it made it really difficult to get through them. So Cork were playing at best 50-50 balls to try and go over them, and then again Limerick seemed to be bringing the ball back out. I thought there was clever distribution by both the players around the middle of the field, in both O'Donovan and, you know, Lynch just continued to pull the strings and make sure that there was decent ball going into what was a fairly isolated forward line. I think when the game started, we wouldn't have expected that the two men who were at the forefront were going to be Hegarty and Casey as an inside forward line, because generally this season Casey has become a little bit more withdrawn. Hegarty has obviously moved around a bit. First half he played a lot deeper, but going into the inside forward line allowed them to do something incredibly different. And look, he had a key part, Hegarty. He was the facilitator for both of those Casey scores at the end of the game. And just back to Rachel's point as well. Maybe that was a case of Limerick were able to do something slightly different. Cork would have been prepping all week thinking that O'Brien was probably going to play at some point or come in, maybe surprised he wasn't named to start, and you're trying to stop Gillan, which they did reasonably well in the first half, and next thing you're having to deal with a different profile of player with Hegarty being up there as a target man and Peter Casey picking off beside him. So again, Kinnear and Kiley decided to shake it up a little bit, and it made a big difference in the second half, particularly where they were able to go a bit longer with that wind as well.
Rachel, I'm going to ask about the referee, and it's not to kind of join in the sort of, we've kind of had all these conversations when it comes to like whether James Owen did the right thing by the book or whether it took away from the game. My point on it is, if Cork have a different referee in that game and are able to play in the kind of phases of play, the overlaps, free flow and hurling, where things get, where Limerick don't have the chance to flood because the previous attack is still from the same phase of play, it much better suits Cork to have a free-flowing game than it does for Limerick. So I think it is something that, while you might have complaints about it, it actually offers a little bit of hope as well, because if they meet again, it's unlikely to be the same referee for the third time.
Still, I don't think we can be pinning our hopes on saying we hope that there's a certain referee to play a certain way, Mick. Like, that's no excuse. I know what you're saying, yeah. And I know your point, but that's also not good enough to be dependent on a refereeing style to play at your best. You know, that's not what you want from an All-Ireland contender. Like, you have to be able to play.
Teams have strengths, though, and I think Cork's strength is better suited to a flowing game, I suppose.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that Limerick would have been too far off that either, though. You know, with the likes of Gillan inside there in the full forward line, if they are able to get quick ball in from the likes of Burns and Hayes, like that kind of game suits Hayes so well, who was, to be fair, you mentioned Barry Walsh being quiet enough earlier. I think he probably did a good job of just keeping Hayes quiet enough in the first half, but he was a lot more prominent there in the last kind of 10-15 minutes. So I understand what you're saying, but I just don't think it's something that we could be too reliant on ever. You know, you have to work out in the game what's not working and fix it, you know, because especially with the talk that referees has been going, will we see another performance like this again from referee? Probably not this year. I can't imagine anyone being as whistle happy. Could be totally wrong there, but the judges need to be able to work around what's happening in front of you.
Yeah, I think defenders are delighted to see a game like that, because there's always one game where everything is pulled and it's like, right, free for all for the rest of the year. So that's grand. Wide open quarterfinals, Will. Let's do it then. The Hawkeye moment of the week, the close call that's getting the whole country talking. Never has that tagline for this segment been more appropriate than, you know, the end of the game. Let's hear what the three of us all think of it, starting with you, Will.
Okay, so obviously we knew this was going to happen at some point. We had a few weeks where the three of us were kind of going, do you know what, there wasn't that many controversial ones, and we're arguing about maybe over a hand pass, over a goal in a game that had a big differential. Obviously, the weekend just gone by, the massive moment, everyone's been talking about it since, is a Cork get a free in the 76th minute. It's already gone a minute, almost 2 minutes over time at that stage. I think most of us, assuming at home, this has to go in reasonably direct, but it's far too far for Patrick Collins to have a direct shot. And you're just wondering, will Cork get enough time when the ball is recycled after the ball being poked in long? Instead, Cork opt to go short. The ball goes to Coleman, eventually goes to O'Mahony on the halfway line. He goes to take a shot. And I think pretty much before the ball is released for his shot, the full-time whistle is blown by James
before
Owens.
Before it goes into his hand.
Yeah, it was blown like really, really early. So again, we'll never know when he hits that, whether he just hits that out of instinct or whether that's exactly where the ball would have went if the whistle hadn't blown. Because I'm sure in the cauldron of the last few minutes and all the whistling and everything that was going on, maybe he doesn't fully hear the full-time whistle at the time that it's gone too. But the upshot of it is that Cork lose by a point. Cork, as we've already heard from Ben O'Connor after the game, they feel that they weren't informed by the officials how much time was left and whether they had time to recycle the ball twice before taking that shot. I'm sure some people will argue, and it's up to you two how you feel about this now, that really if you're the Cork players, they should have went and either spoken to Sean Stack, who was on the field at the time, or spoken to James Owens and went, okay, is there going to be enough time for a second possession on this? Is it going to be played till it's dead? How long is left? Because there was treatment happening before the free was taken, and I think it's fair to maybe argue that, well, with the discretion of the referee, you got to add a little bit of extra time onto that. But I think for most of us at home, we'd be thinking this is almost 2 minutes over the allotted. I think it was over 2 minutes over it by the time that the free was moved short. We were thinking it had to go long. Cork obviously felt it didn't have to go long, and it has a big enough impact in how the provincial final finishes.
Rachel.
Yeah, it all depends on what's said on the field. Like, I think it's madness if Cork haven't asked the ref is this the last play? Instinctually, that's what you do. You know, when you know that, that Collins doesn't get that if he takes it on, I don't think. So if it was just going to be the last play, it probably would have dropped short anyway. Game is over. But if they were, if they were told that it wasn't going to be the last play, then I think, fair enough, you've got a point to be pissed off. But you have to be asking that question when it's, you know, the game is lying on this decision. Mm. And the fact that he didn't even blow it up when the ball was just hit short to Coleman, it's almost like giving us a small bit of hope that, right, we're going to be able to see this out. You think if the ball leaves Colin Slitter and he blows it up, then that was that. It's almost the teaser that we got by Coleman being able to give the ball to O'Mahony.
That's yeah.
Why there was almost more uproar, I think, because it's like that's neither here nor there. It wasn't the last play, but it also what was another 15 seconds to allow that ball go into the air. And that for me might have been the most frustrating thing. At the time though, I wasn't that aggrieved because I thought we have had so many chances to equalize here. We should have done. So like in terms of that being the losing of the game for us, I wouldn't agree with that, but it's the fact that we got two passes off and it didn't blow it up. It's like, what's the third there? That's probably, I think, what ignited so much frustration. And then just the manner of the game as well, with all the frees being awarded, which led to that outburst at full time.
Yeah. I'm very in the middle on this, I have to say. I do think that a team, I think, first of all, if you get a free, I think you should be entitled to benefit from that free. Otherwise, what's the point? It's one of the biggest things that drives me mad about anything is like, oh, time's up, whatever. So you have a free where, like, when you hit the free, the full-time whistle goes. Say if it's not a scorable one, as this might not have been. What's the benefit of it? What do I get for being fouled? So I also think that if there is an unwritten rule. Now, Joe Canning on Second Captain said that and he would have taken many the last minute free with James Owen as the referee, says he wouldn't say anything to you. He's just that type of ref that would annoy you and never wouldn't tell you anything that you need to know, like, you know. And it was kind of backed up by a few other people, I think, that would know him as a referee, I suppose. We'll have Seamus Flanagan in tomorrow morning. I'll ask him about that as well. But I just get the impression that there's a sort of a, we don't really know if Owen's told them. But at the same time, I do feel it's an unwritten rule that you kind of let them know what they can do here or not. I do feel like he just made the decision, though, that he would allow one phase of play. And I think that if Coleman had taken the shot, the whistle wouldn't have gone. I think the second pass was like, that's too much now. You're faffing around. Time has been up for 5 minutes or for 2 minutes. That's it now, you know. So I'm very in the middle of it. I ultimately probably would have killed anyone to just let it develop and see what happened, I think, is probably where I fall down as well.
I wonder what would have happened as well if, say, the ball had gone to Coleman, which was kind of acceptable short pass. Coleman puts it in long, whether that was an attempt at a shot or whether it was an attempt to try and just play on, put it into the area. Yeah. They would have played on at that stage. Yeah. So then they would have played quite a few seconds more than the moment the ball gets to Manny.
I actually think the second pass annoyed the referee into blowing
maybe,
the ball.
Yeah.
So like, you know, which I kind of, I get where he's coming from. Like, anyway, can I just say one more thing on this match on a more positive note, right? And then we'll talk about the Leinster final. But there was a phase of play in the first half where I can't remember, Limerick probably should have had a free and Cork cleared it, and I think it was Owen Downey got the ball and he hit a really quick ball into Barrett in a kind of a nothing position, and Barrett just like went, screw this, and burst in, decided he was going to go for a goal 45 yards out. Now actually he's brilliantly defended by Will O'Donoghue, who shepherds him out, and it's like really, really good play. So he recycles it, Brian Hayes gets it, really, really quick ball inside to Healy. Healy shoots, Quaid save. The highlight will be the shot and save. But that entire phase of play happening at, I'm not joking, 100 miles an hour, the entire thing from the minute Cork win the ball back to the 65. It's just everything the game should be. And maybe we didn't have enough of that, but when you see hurling played like that, and that's brilliant play by five different players, three from Cork, two from Limerick, over that like 10 seconds of play. Just wanted to highlight that. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Similarly, in the second half, when Casey, that was just a chaotic 2 or 3 minutes. Casey dispossesses Collins. Limerick take a shot. It's like pulled on the ground outside of the Cork goal mouth, back up the field, and that's when William Buckley takes on the goal. It goes out for the 65. Tim O'Mahony hits the post. It comes back down. Dermot Burns gets the free brought up for dissent and puts it over. That 2 or 3 minutes as well was probably what we were expecting for more of the match, but because we didn't get it, you'd appreciate it even more, you know. And like the game, that was the turning point of the game, I think, those 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Instead of Cork going 3 up, Cork are 1 up, and Limerick just feel a bit of a momentum pull at that stage.
You both got me in the mood for installment number 4, if it happens now at this stage.
5.
Well, 5, if you want to include the Munster Hurling League final, which I think
league,
both...
In Division 1 and A, the league as well.
Ah, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that is a real fixture. Like, so we'll
yeah,
say
yeah,
5
no.
anyway. We'll say
100%.
When
drive
it's
for 5.
Park, it's a real game. right, anyway, that's them. Look, we all have assumed for, I think, 3 years that it's going to happen again, and hasn't yet, so... I wouldn't be counting any chickens, but we'll see what happens. One team that might have something to say about it is Galway, who were genuinely impressive, I would say. And I completely understand why they'd be up to 3rd in your power rankings. It looked like the most cohesive Galway performance of the year. Their young lads, especially in Nyland and Rabbit, were both outstanding, I thought. Even had like someone like Connor Cooney, who was brought on early for the injury to Burke, like, looked like the Connor Cooney of 10 years ago. Like, not 2 years ago, kind of 10 years ago. You look at, you know, almost a different hurler. So, really, really good. Dublin, though, for me, Rachel, like, 2 minutes into the game, I kind of went, they're tight. They mishit a couple of sideline balls. They were dropping passes to each other and all. And I'm like, fair enough, they kind of got together enough to stay in it, but I never felt that they were loose or hurling at their best.
And it's just that start that you really want them to get to ignite that game, because you know Galway are little, you know, they're favourites, and they've probably had it their own way in a lot of patches in the Leinster Championship coming up, and you just want Dublin to get off to a really, really good start. And even if they're not leading, just physically be at it, and for there not to be a lot of space. But the space that the Galway players had as well around the ball was you know, I couldn't get over, and it probably, that lends itself into the rest of the first half, where even if it's being played at a good pace, the intensity or the ferocity doesn't feel that way if you're not in close quarters with the other players. But I mean, credit to Dublin when they hit that 1-3 without reply. They did bring it back and they gave themselves a chance. But yeah, like, you'd nearly know from the way they started that this isn't the Dublin that we saw kicking Kilkenny out of the Championship in Parnell Park, you know. And if they'd gotten that start and the crowd were able to get behind them, it could have been a completely different game. But in fairness to Galway, I think it was clear that they kind of had their number from early days. I'm sorry, lads, but I am going to have to hop out after here, because the launch is getting underway. So I'll get the inside scoop. I'll ask the lads themselves. I think Aaron Nyland is down for interview, so I'll ask him what he thought of the game and come back with direct quotes, not to my nonsense.
Fair enough. Thanks a bit, Rachel. I know you have to go as well, so I feel like we've done the Leinster final a little bit dirty on this one. But if we'll wrap it up by just saying that, like, if you think that you mentioned pressing earlier on in the show when we were talking about the survey, like, the lack of Dublin pressing on Galway, just allowing a player as good as Cathal Mannion, like, to literally stand with the ball on his hurley and look around and see what he's going to do with the ball, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. And like, there are loads of things where you're like, Galway were better or Dublin weren't at their best, but then there's other things you go, what were you doing tactically, you know? And there's lots of that where really good managers and really good management teams can make those kinds of mistakes, and maybe they'll adjust in later games. But still, though, when you're 45,000 people and a lot of them are Dubs turning up to a hurling match for the first time, you're kind of scratching your head a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, it felt like Dublin wanted to protect the space in front of their goal, ended up conceding 4 goals anyway, and allowed both Cathal Mannion,
isn't it? Like, there's like the
And it ends up with just Monaghan and Mannion end up in kind of acres of space, and they're able to dictate the tempo. And in, you know, in Monaghan's case, he was able to just take shots from reasonably free positions because Dublin were sitting too deep. And it just felt like there was almost too much of a gap as well between their defence and their forwards. And oftentimes they were taking shots when the ball came back out from not the best positions, or maybe not taking the next play on. I remember Chris Crummy went to play a 1-2 at one point, and he went over in behind the Galway defence, and a shot is taken. They couldn't get Donald Burke into the game as a result. He felt felt like he was isolated. And so often they just repeated the process of trying to put the ball in long towards John Hederton, and Doughty Burke has an unbelievable game on him and ends up just mopping up everything that goes in. And because of the injuries that they picked up during the game, they had to bring the second twin tower in Ronan Hayes in a bit earlier than they would have expected. And Galway were more than happy for that aerial approach to just continue and continue and continue. And it played right into Galway's hands. Like, it finishes 4:29 to 4:15. And if you didn't see the game, you might think, wow, you know, Dublin have run up this massive total. And maybe it's a case of that game wasn't quite as one-sided as it felt. But like, with the exception of the purple patch period that Rachel mentioned just a moment ago for Dublin, it didn't feel like Dublin were in this Leinster final at all. And that has to be the most frustrating part, is it felt a bit like the Kilkenny performance a couple of seasons ago where Dublin went to the final and got played off the pitch. And I am sure that the way that Neil O'Callaghan was looking at this was they didn't want to create a situation like Cork last year where they left space maybe for Rabbit and Niall and the Burke before he went off to be able to dictate things on the inside forward line. But the reality is they were beaten by 1,000 cuts slightly further out the pitch. But I'd agree with you, while obviously the result in Salt Hill was very eye-catching against Kilkenny, this felt like the more complete performance from Galway for this season. I was talking to John McIntyre, former Galway manager, yesterday. He was pointing out that Galway have got quite a decent record against Cork and have caused Cork problems. He was straight away pointing out, I'm not ruling out Offaly on Sunday week when it comes to that quarter final. But if Cork and Galway were to qualify, as we would expect, and as the bookmakers of Offaly had 100-1 to lift the Liam McCarthy, I'm not going to make an argument that they're going to shock Cork the next day. If it does end up being a semi-final, maybe Galway are well set to give them a good game.
We'll talk before then about whether Offaly could at least bruise Cork, if not beat them. But I think you're right. Like, if you watch those games, like, Cork are not infallible. Like, I think that they can do to teams what they did to Clare, say. But that doesn't happen as much as them being in battles, you know. And I think Galway could be, if you compare the two performances on Saturday and Sunday, Galway were the more impressive, you know. So Cork definitely had tougher opposition, who could have cancelled them out, and tougher conditions as well. So look, I think Cork will be favourites, but that'll be a really interesting game. A lot will depend on, I suppose, how Cork get on against Offaly in the quarterfinals. But Will, we've kept you long enough. Thanks a million for that today.
My pleasure.
Two changes. He's a change at the top of the power rankings. Limerick have gone to number one, Cork number two, Galway have gone up to number three, Clare at four, Dublin at five, Offaly at six. They're the six teams left in the All-Ireland Hurling Championships. We'll be back in a couple of weeks after the quarterfinals to talk about that. Don't forget that the power rankings on Off the Ball are with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GEA. Talk to you soon.
The power rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.